Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hi, I'm Lucas Ann, and thank you for listening to Locked On Clippers. If you like the Locked On Podcast Network and you're interested in joining our team, this may be your chance. The Locked On Podcast Network is hiring a national sales manager. You can be a part of the fastest-growing sports podcast network, selling the NBA channel, NFL channel, and the entire network to our national advertisers. If you have the skills, the perseverance, and the game to be a part of the Locked On Podcast Network, email lockedonpodcasts@gmail.com with your resume. That email address again was lockedonpodcasts@gmail.com. Now enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the Locked On Clippers podcast. I'm your host, Lucas Han, and today is Friday, June 2nd, 2017. Now, as we wrap up our week of Clippers coverage, I'm just going to briefly today talk about Game 1 of the NBA Finals and what it means for us as Clippers fans who are obviously rooting against the Golden State Warriors. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about the Clippers roster needs as we sort of get ready for what's going to be a few weeks of basically off-season preparation leading into the draft and then free agency, which the Clippers don't really have a draft pick, so unless they make a move, draft day will presumably be uneventful for them. But free agency is going to be absolutely wild. As we discussed yesterday, Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, the Clippers' two signature players, are both free agents, and so in addition to seeking to re-sign them, the Clippers will attempt to be putting a team around them. But I want to start off talking a little bit about Game 1 of the NBA Finals last night. And overall, you know, I know everyone is dying to have their take, right? Like, okay, we waited a week for a game. Now there's finally a game. This is what it means. I figured it out. I understand everything about basketball now. I'm so smart, listen to me. That's what everyone's saying, right? The truth is, I don't think we learned that much from this game. I really don't. Now, the Golden State Warriors are very, very good. They're the best team in NBA history. And the Cleveland Cavaliers are very, very good, but like normal very, very good. They're good enough to be one of the best teams in the league in the sense that in any given NBA season, there's going to be two or three or four elite upper echelon teams. The Cavaliers are like at that level. Very good, legitimate championship contenders. I mean, they won the championship last year, and they're maybe boosted just a notch above that because they have LeBron James, the greatest player in NBA history. However, they're not at the same level as the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors are the best basketball team, you know, aside from Team USA national teams that go to compete in the Olympics, this Warriors team is probably the best basketball team ever assembled. Which is like, sounds crazy coming out of the mouth, but it's true. And you look at this team that was probably better than the Cavaliers last year, although they lost to them, much to the Cavaliers' credit, the Warriors were probably better than the Cavaliers last year and set the all-time record for wins. Then they added Kevin Durant, who's the kind of guy who comes in game one of the finals this year with 38 points on 14 of 26 shooting, 8 rebounds, and 8 assists. This was Kevin Durant's night in game one. But here's why I'm saying I don't think we learned very much, because we knew this. We knew that the Warriors were better than the Cavaliers. It really shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone that the Warriors are better than the Cavaliers. I think I saw a number today, or a number yesterday before game one, that there was like a 55% chance that the Warriors won in 4, 5, or 6, and a 45% chance that they won in 7 or the Cavs won. Which means that not only are they favored in the series, but even if you take Warriors in 7 and throw it to the Cavs side, Warriors in 4, 5, or 6 is still more likely to happen. Now, That doesn't mean that, you know, all right, turn off the TV, don't even show up, the Warriors have it. Obviously, no one's crowning them too early. And we saw last year, they went up 3-1, and the Cavaliers were able to pull off a miraculous comeback and win the championship in 7 games. But I think in a large part, the Cavaliers need to have a lot of things break their way. And we saw that last year. Things kind of had to happen for them at the right time with Draymond Green's suspension, with some Golden State shooting struggles, Cleveland getting hot at the right time to win those important games and come back in the series. And with Kevin Durant now being on the Warriors, the margin for error shrinks that much more, and the amount of things you need to break your way increases. So when you see the Cavaliers, first of all, only scoring 91 points in a game, not going to cut it. Second of all, with 20 turnovers, absolutely not going to cut it. Third, 11 of 31 from 3, 36%, not good enough. I know 36% is like fine, but they need to hit shots, especially when you look at who's involved. Off the bench, Richard Jefferson 0 for 2, Darren Williams 0 for 2, Iman Shumpert 1 for 3, Kyle Korver 0 for 3. Those are the supporting cast players that you need to come in and hit shots. And even Channing Frye, who didn't play tonight, but if he gets chances in this series, Korver has to come in and make a few threes. Darren Williams, Richard Jefferson, these guys have to come in and make shots to take the pressure off of LeBron and Kyrie Irving. Because if those guys, instead of combining for the four guys I just listed, combined 1 for 10 from 3, if they get hot, instead of going 1 for 10, they go 6 for 10, not only does that give you obviously 15 extra points, but it helps your spacing so much, and it makes LeBron and Kyrie Irving's lives easier. And then as a team, Cleveland shot 35%. Not good enough. So, yeah, they lost by 22 points. And if they have nights like that, you know, even one of those things you could point to in a game and say is fatal. They didn't get hot from three. They had a bad shooting night. The supporting, the bench shooters didn't step up. The turnovers were too low. Or they turned the ball over too many times. The overall scoring was too low. And obviously those things are related. You're not going to score as many points if you don't shoot well. You're not going to score as many points if you turn the ball over a lot. The overall team three-point shooting is going to be down if the bench shooters don't step up. But this is what I talked about on Twitter to Chris Manning, who writes for Fear the Sword and hosts the Lockdown Cavaliers podcast. I told him, basically, the biggest thing in this series is going to be Cleveland's bench shooters. Because Cleveland has a lot of shooters off the bench. And even in the starting lineup, J.R. Smith, Kevin Love, then they bring off the bench Kyle Korver, Channing Frye, Richard Jefferson, Darren Williams, a lot of guys who can shoot the basketball. If those guys each make a couple threes, that swings the game so drastically compared to if they don't really contribute at all and you're putting so much on LeBron's shoulders. Now, you look at the other half of the box score. Golden State didn't play their best game. But honestly, if Golden State plays their best game, you're not going to beat them. You're counting on Golden State playing a normal game and you playing your best game, and then it's going to be a close game. That's just what the talent disparity is. So if anyone tells you, well, Golden State won by 20, but Klay Thompson was only 3-16, they should have won by more, you tell them, well, the Cavaliers turned the ball over 20 times to go only Golden State's 4. So yeah, Golden State might be, I don't know about 20 points, but Golden State might be 10, 15 points better than the Cavaliers. So the Cavaliers need 10 or 15 points worth of fluky things. They need to shoot the ball better over the course of a series. They need to not turn the ball over. They need cold nights. You know, on a night like tonight, Kevin Durant has 38, Steph Curry has 28. If one of those guys has a cold night, it's a much different game. Obviously, with Draymond and Klay both already being slowed down. But again, I don't expect the Cavaliers to win, although I'm not willing to count them out as long as they have LeBron. Any team with LeBron is going to have a puncher's chance because he's just unreal, the level of talent. But overall, the Warriors are a better team, and that really shouldn't catch anyone by surprise. So no, I don't think that game one being a 20-point win for the Warriors means that all hope is lost. That's not what it meant last year when the Warriors won Game 1 and then won in a blowout in Game 2. But at the same time, I'm not, you know, going to broadcast any foolish hope. And even before the Cavaliers lost Game 1, I would have said the same thing. I hope they can win. I think they have a chance. But the Warriors are the prohibitive favorites, and they should be because they're a significantly better team. Now, I'll talk a little bit more about that in Monday's episode once we've seen Game 2. And then I'll try to talk a little bit about it through the series because, after all, even though this is a Clippers podcast, we're all basketball and NBA fans. And I'm assuming most people, if you're a diehard fan enough to be listening to this podcast on a daily basis, you're probably still watching the game. So, you know, it's a good outlet to be able to talk about that. And then, you know, especially just look at these teams because this is where we want the Clippers to be, right? If the Clippers had had a perfect 2017 season, it would have involved beating Golden State, which is what Cleveland is trying to do right now, and then facing Cleveland in the NBA Finals, which is what Golden State is doing right now. So there's a learning opportunity here, aside from just the entertainment aspect. Now, transitioning into full Clipper talk, I'm going to keep going with kind of the trend from yesterday, where yesterday I talked about max contracts for Chris and Blake, while simultaneously I had a column that went up on the blog ClipsNation.com about max contracts for Chris and Blake and the maximum salary rules for the NBA in the new collective bargaining agreement. So today, my column on Clips Nation is sort of examining the Clippers roster needs for this summer, kind of trying to lay a groundwork for what's coming in the next couple weeks regarding the tools that the Clippers have and the players that the Clippers can and possibly should target. Now, to kind of start this conversation, I want to look back at last offseason. Because in an effort to plan my offseason, or sort of pre-offseason coverage, my June coverage before we get into real rumors and signings in July, I looked back at what I did last summer, last May and last June, to get ready for free agency 2016. And the truth is, I didn't get much help from my past self, even though, I mean, not to toot my own horn, but not to say that I did a bad job last summer, because I think I did a pretty good job of off-season coverage last summer, but just that the situations aren't really comparable. So if you guys recall last summer, the Clippers' big decisions revolved around Austin Rivers, Jamal Crawford, and Jeff Green, who were their three bird right free agents. Basically, those three guys, plus the Clippers' mid-level exception and their biannual exception, were the five opportunities that the Clippers had to spend more than the minimum salary to add players. Anything outside of those five spots would have to be a minimum salary player. And what we expected, because the Clippers were coming off a relatively successful 2016 campaign that unfortunately ended in the Portland injury, or in the injuries in Portland, so the Clippers were knocked out in the first round. But I think by the end of that season, the Clippers felt pretty good about what they had with Cole Aldrich, what they had with their second unit. Luka Mbamute was not quite the player that he was in the 2017 season, but he was showing signs. And Jeff Green had only been with the team for part of a season, and Blake and Chris had been hurt. And there's kind of this feeling that you could just run it back and things would be better. Not in the sense that you've been running it back with Chris and Blake and DeAndre and JJ each of the last 5 years, but in the sense that let's try to get Cole Aldrich and Wesley Johnson and Austin Rivers and Jeff Green back and bring the whole rotation back for a full year together, a full training camp, and get growth. Because if you'll recall, during that season, the Clippers went through the whole thing with Lance Stephenson and Josh Smith, and there was a lot of turmoil, rotation being switched around. So, the big thing was those three bird guys, Rivers, Crawford, and Green. And then the Clippers had those two exceptions, the mid-level and the biannual. And we knew that they desperately needed to, or not desperately needed, but that they were going to try to re-sign Cole Aldrich, Wesley Johnson, and Luka Mbamute, who were three, obviously, big-time rotation pieces the year before. And then they needed a Pablo Prigioni replacement at point guard. So that's kind of what we looked at going into free agency. What is Austin Rivers going to get? Should they give it to him? What is Jamal Crawford going to get? Should they give it to him? What is Jeff Green going to get? Should they give it to him? What are the Clippers' options for the mid-level exception, including trying to keep Cole Aldrich or Wesley Johnson or Lucas Barmute? What are the Clippers' options for the biannual exception, possibly trying to keep one of those guys if they take a pay cut? And then who can the Clippers look at for the minimum to round out the roster? Probably need another wing, probably need another point guard, probably need another big man. And pretty much those predictions were accurate. Cole Aldrich got paid more than the Clippers could afford, which I think we expected. The Clippers replaced him with Most Bates on a minimum salary, which was a good signing. They used the exceptions, the mid-level to keep Wesley Johnson, the biannual to keep Lucas Barmute, which is what we expected, even if that use of the mid-level exception might have been less than ideal in retrospect. And then they overpaid to keep Jamal Crawford and Austin Rivers because the only alternative would have been signing someone for the minimum. So they were stuck in this situation where you're over the salary cap, you have the bird rights to Jamal Crawford. Your option is either give him that $13 million that he wants or let him leave and sign a replacement for the league minimum of $1 million. You're not going to get an adequate replacement at that price point. So the Clippers overpaid to keep Rivers and Crawford. And the only thing that I guess we didn't see coming was that Jeff Green left in free agency. He went to the Orlando Magic, who gave him $15 million. And the Clippers were still courting Kevin Durant at the time. And Jeff just went. He didn't wait for them. So you fill out the roster with Raymond Felton, Allen Anderson, Brandon Bass. You get the young guys in, Bryce Johnson, Diamond Stone. That's it. It was a pretty predictable summer, in all honesty. Now, this summer is not like that at all. This summer, the Clippers are starting the summer with just Austin Rivers, Jamal Crawford, Wesley Johnson, DeAndre Jordan, Bryce Johnson, and Diamond Stone on their roster. So the two young guys who've barely played, Wesley Johnson, who was cut out of the rotation midway through a horrible season last year, the two backup guards, Austin Rivers and Jamal Crawford, and the all-star, all-NBA, Olympian center, DeAndre Jordan. So it's not like there's nothing good there. It's just that there aren't a whole lot of pieces. You've only got three guys from the rotation returning, essentially, because Wesley Johnson was out of the rotation by the end of the season. So anytime you've got that, you know, those few returners, you're going to have a lot of flexibility. And flexibility can be good or bad. In some cases, it means you've got tons of cap space to go spend. In some cases, it means you're kind of going to be scrambling. And I think for the Clippers in this situation, because they're already a good team, I think they'll be scrambling. Now, let's say if you're the Lakers a couple years from now, when Timofey Mozgov and Luol Deng's contracts expire and a bunch of cap space opens up, they're not going to be scrambling because they're still going to have Brandon Ingram and D'Angelo Russell and Jordan Clarkson and Julius Randle and Lonzo Ball if they draft him this year. They're going to have those young guys, their core, but they're going to be freeing up a lot of space when those veterans expire. For the Clippers, their core is what's basically expiring and being on the market: Chris Paul, J.J. Redick, and Blake Griffin. And so we don't know how the summer is going to go, and it's much harder to say, here are five minimum salary point guards that the Clippers should target. Because we don't know if the Clippers are going to need a backup point guard if Chris Paul and Raymond Felton return. And if Chris Paul doesn't return, the Clippers are probably going to want to turn younger. If Chris Paul does return, but they lose Raymond Felton, then maybe they go for another veteran like Raymond Felton, who they know is going to be solid in those 12 or 16 minutes a game. It's very difficult to plan for. And, you know, I pointed this out in the article that's going up on Clips Nation. There's a very, very real chance that 2 months from today, 6 weeks from today, whatever, when free agency is done and the dust has settled, that the Clippers have their strongest roster ever, and that they have brand new five-year deals for Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, and they pulled off a Carmelo Anthony trade, and they put together some good supporting pieces, and everyone's super excited for the season. There's also a chance that 2 months from today, the Clippers' starting guards are Austin Rivers and Jamal Crawford, and they're on their way to a 20-win season and a very high pick in next year's draft. I mean, the paths that the Clippers could go down could not be any wider. From improving from a team that's won 50 games years in a row, taking a step up, adding another star, hopefully vaulting into championship contention, anywhere to potentially being one of the worst and least watchable teams in the NBA. From compelling and great to horrible and ugly. And anywhere in between is where the Clippers could end up, really, if they keep one of the two stars or if they lose both but are able to do something with the cap room. And so it's a difficult thing to project. And like I said, you can't do, oh, here are five veteran point guards the Clippers should target. Or you can, but it's not the same type of concrete situation. And maybe once we get to July 2nd or 3rd, and we know what's up with Paul and Griffin, and we know what's up with Carmelo Anthony, then we can have a more realistic talk about, okay, well, now the Clippers have these three holes that they need to plug. But until then, it's a lot of it's up in the air. But that doesn't mean that we can't do anything in the next month. It just means that we're going to have to prepare with a broader scope. And essentially, this is what the Clippers front office has to be doing as well, because when they're in a situation like they were in the summer of 2016, they can very narrowly focus on, okay, who are our options going to be to replace Cole Aldrich as a backup center? And they can really scout in depth 20 different guys from around the league who are going to be free agents and take notes and make contact and then reach out to guys as free agency goes on. Hey, we know you haven't gotten a bigger deal yet. Do you want to come play for us for the minimum and build your value up? And that's where they ended up landing most mates. They can't be as precise this time because they're going to have to be looking at so many more guys so that they're prepared for such a wide variety of scenarios. But I think the biggest focus has to be on, if Paul and Griffin return, then what's next? And the reason I say that is that I don't think the Clippers, if Paul and Griffin both leave, would be well served by using their cap space in any meaningful way this summer. I think that if Paul and Griffin leave, the obvious direction for the team is to fully rebuild, not try to go sign someone like Paul Millsap or Gordon Hayward and win 30, 35 games. I think you try, not necessarily try to lose games, obviously, but you more go after young guys, restricted free agents, Otto Porter, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, maybe even guys like Tyler Ennis, James Young, and you kind of stack up with young guys and you try to build and develop, which I know is something people said the Clippers never do. Well, the reason the Clippers don't develop young guys or develop young guys by giving them playing time in NBA games is because the Clippers are a very good team that's trying to win NBA games. And if Brandon Bass gives you a better chance of winning than Bryce Johnson, that's important because you've got a star point guard on the wrong side of 30. You've got a very small window that you're working within. If the Chris Paul window is out the door, then there's no reason to be playing a Brandon Bass over a Bryce Johnson. Throw him out there. Let him make mistakes. Trial by fire. Let him grow in the moment. So that's why I think the most important thing is to look at what's coming next if you keep Chris Paul and Blake Griffin. Because if you don't keep Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, what you do this summer doesn't matter a whole ton. It's just going to be about sucking and then building around whatever high draft pick you get next year. So that doesn't mean that we won't talk at all about what the Clippers' options are, how they should proceed, if there are any replacements, or at the very least, not that you're going to replace Chris Paul by pursuing another good veteran point guard, but you are going to need a point guard. So who are some young guys you can go after? Who's attainable at what price point as a stopgap, as maybe a future player, etc.? We'll talk about that a little bit. But the main thing I think we should focus on is, once you keep those guys, what's next? And the next shoe to fall is the Carmelo Anthony deal or not? Because I think when it comes down to what role players the Clippers are going to put around this core, it matters whether you have Carmelo Anthony or not. Because Carmelo Anthony, while he is very talented, and while I definitely believe that the Clippers should get him if they can, has his own strengths and weaknesses as a player. Now, presumably, Carmelo Anthony would start at small forward for the Clippers, but because of how he's aging, he would play a good chunk of his minutes as the backup power forward to Blake Griffin. Now, that means if you get Carmelo Anthony, you probably don't need to get a guy like Brandon Bass to come be the backup power forward. It also means that if Carmelo Anthony is going to be playing backup power forward, you don't want to pair him with another poor defender like Mo Spates. You want to go get a defensive backup center. And you can just kind of see how stuff like that dominoes, where it's hard to know who's a good fit around your core until you know what your core is going to be. And Carmelo Anthony shapes that a lot. Now, Luke and Mbamute should probably be brought back either way because he's a good player and the Clippers don't have to use one of their exceptions to keep him. They can sign him using his early bird rights. But that's just another reason why if you get Carmelo, you probably don't need another forward, or you at least don't need to spend your mid-level exception on another forward. The priority spots there really need to be a backup 2-3 wing player, because presumably you're losing shooting guards in the Carmelo Anthony deal, and a backup center, but a defensive one who can play next to Melo. If you don't get Carmelo Anthony, you've got to make a big decision about J.J. Redick. If you're going to pay to keep him at his age as he's beginning to decline, or if you're going to lose him for nothing and start Austin Rivers. And then you have to focus pretty much on the same gaps. You still need a backup center. Now, because Luke Mbamute is back in the starting lineup at small forward, you need a backup forward as well, or two backup forwards to go behind him and Blake Griffin. And then hopefully you can re-sign Raymond Felton, because the Clippers can pay Raymond Felton up to 120% of the league minimum salary, which for his case as a 10-year veteran is about $2.8 million. Now, I don't think anyone's going to come along and offer Raymond Felton more than $3 million. I don't think anyone's going to come along and offer him $3 million. So he had a good year with the Clippers. The Clippers like him. It was a good fit. They're going to be able to give him more money than anyone else will be willing to offer him. There's no reason for him not to come back. Brandon Bass is another guy who the Clippers can pay that $2.8 million, and I don't think any other team is going to give Brandon Bass more than the minimum, but because he wasn't in the rotation for a lot of last season, maybe he seeks a team where he thinks he'll get more opportunities, or maybe the Clippers are in a situation where they don't want him back because they feel like they don't need him. I think if you get Carmelo Anthony, you probably don't need Brandon Bass. Or at least you don't need him in your rotation. You could sign him to be a third string player again as like a depth big man option. If you don't get Carmelo Anthony, Brandon Bass becomes a lot more useful in your rotation. So, like I said at the beginning, I know I'm being incredibly vague, but there are just so many options. And that's something that I think it's important to realize as you start planning for this offseason, is that almost every door is open. And that's not the case that it's been in off-seasons past, as I've worked with a lot of you guys and a lot of Clippers fans on coming up with realistic scenarios within the league salary cap rules. Now, we're still going to be working within the league salary cap rules, but what's a realistic scenario is vastly expanded. So that's just kind of a look at how crazy it's going to be, and a way to say that in the coming weeks, we won't be looking at 5 point guards and 5 centers that the Clippers can target. We're going to be looking at a lot more than 5 and a lot more than just point guards and centers. And then as we talk about guys, I'll probably mention which scenarios they fit. So when we talk about a guy like Thabo Sefolosha, I'll say that he's a guy the Clippers could target with their mid-level exception if they get Carmelo Anthony and need another 2/3 player as the backup shooting guard because they're trading their shooting guards in the Carmelo Anthony deal. Or we can talk about how Mo Spates is a guy the Clippers could try to bring back with their mid-level exception. But if they get Carmelo Anthony, it's probably not a good fit. And Mo Spates could very likely get more than the $5.2 million taxpayer mid-level. We'll talk about, you know, and those are some examples. I don't want to get too much into it because we've got weeks to talk about these guys and these free agents and what scenarios they fit in. But that, I think that'll be the general framework. We're going to talk about a lot of free agents, probably almost everyone who's not like a max caliber player. So Gordon Hayward, we don't really need to talk about. And even guys like Danilo Gallinari, Serge Ibaka, we don't need to talk about. Going down through like PJ Tucker, who's probably going to get $10 or $12 million. But then once we get into the guys who start becoming realistic targets to either accept that $5.2 million mid-level exception, or they get better offers but they're going to take a pay cut to come play for the Clippers, or could consider taking that pay cut because the Clippers are a good team, we're going to talk about a lot of guys, the different scenarios that they fit into, how the Clippers can target them, what role they'd play. Do they play well with Melo? Are they not a guy who plays well with Melo? The options are endless, but we're going to try to pour through it as comprehensively as we can in the weeks to come so that we are really ready when July 1st rolls around and that you guys, as Clippers fans, know who you want. You know, it's not like there's going to be some vote about who the Clippers should spend their mid-level exception on, but it's fun to hear from people on social media about the scenarios that they want. And then when the Clippers sign your guy, you can be happy. Or if the Clippers sign someone who you don't like, you can say, I think this is a bad move. And then if the guy ends up not turning out, you know, you kind of know what you're talking about. It's like an extra level to just seeing a guy play poorly or well and liking him versus there's a different level of satisfaction. Like, for example, Cole Aldrich is a guy I said 2 years ago, the Clippers should target Cole Aldrich. And a lot of people kind of laughed it off because he'd had some like shacking a fool moments in New York. His stats had never been that good. He's this big, stiff, white guy from Kansas. But I was like, I think the Clippers should sign him. I think he's a good value signing. And he came in and he played exceptionally well, and it felt very good to be right. Now, that's not to say I'm perfect, because I also really thought the Clippers should sign Spencer Hawes, which they did, and it didn't work out. And I really thought they shouldn't sign Matt Barnes, which they did, and it worked out exceptionally well. So nobody's perfect, least of all me. But I think it's fun to kind of gain a knowledge about what the free agent market is going to be so that when these decisions happen, you can have an informed opinion and then kind of test yourself on it later and learn and improve as you project what you think the offseason should look like in future summers. Now, that's going to be the end of our show and the end of our week here at Locked On Clippers. As always, if you have any comments, questions, or feedback, you can hit me up on Twitter at LucasJHan or email me lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com. Make sure you're checking out the Clips Nation blog for all of our great offseason coverage at clipsnation.com. And then check out the Clips Nation Twitter. We had a couple really funny tweets yesterday that got some great numbers. Making fun of the Warriors, even though they won game one, still going to make fun of them at every opportunity. So make sure to follow that account at ClipsNationSBN, and make sure to listen to this podcast next week when we come back on Monday. Thanks for listening, guys. This is Lucas Hand signing off for Locked On Clippers. Napa
know-how. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.